This is Naked Astronomy, the space science podcast from the Naked Scientists. Earlier this month, the Herschel Atlas, that's the Astrophysical Terahertz Large Area Survey Project, published some findings in the journal Science. They had identified a number of galaxies that are acting as gravitational lenses, effectively acting as a zoom lens to give us a glimpse of incredibly distant galaxies. Loretta Dunn, principal investigator of the Herschel Atlas project.
The reason we made the Herschel Atlas survey, which is the largest survey that Herschel is conducting. It's going to look at a very large area of the sky, which is 550 square degrees. Now, just for comparison, the moon is something like half a degree across. So this is a really huge area of the sky. And we wanted to do this because the bands that Herschel studies are the far infrared and submillimeter part of the spectrum, which is out beyond the infrared, more into the microwave region. And what we're seeing there is not light from stars. It's actually radiation from very tiny dust grains in galaxies, just small solid particles, a bit like soot or the particles in cigarette smoke. And this cold material, it just radiates at these long wavelengths because it's only a few tens of degrees above absolute zero. So with Herschel, we're actually looking at a completely different component of the makeup of galaxies. We're looking at the gas and dust material in galaxies and not the stars. And this has never been possible before over such a large area of sky because in order to see these wavelengths, you have to be in space. The atmosphere absorbs them very efficiently. And so Herschel is the largest space telescope now. It was launched in May 2009. And it's given us the opportunity for the first time to really explore this part of the spectrum and just to find out what's out there. So we wanted to do a large survey because that's how you really figure out what the universe is made of in these wave bands. As part of that, we knew that we'd be very good at picking up rare objects, or objects that, unless you knew where to look, you wouldn't find them if you only looked at a small area. So by looking at a very large area, these rare objects would pop up. And the one category of rare objects we hoped to find, we had a prediction from a model, was these strongly lensed galaxies, strongly gravitationally lensed sources. And that's where we have just the right chance alignment of a very distant background dusty source in the distant and early universe just happened to be lined up with a much closer massive galaxy. And that nearby massive galaxy acts as a gravitational lens. So its mass bends the space-time around it and causes the light from the distant galaxy to be curved in its path towards us, much like a glass lens curves the path of the light that passes through it. And that allows the background galaxy, basically, it becomes magnified, it becomes distorted in its size and shape, and it becomes brighter. That means it's much easier for us to study those distant background galaxies because they're much easier for us to see. And the paper that appeared in Science last week, if you like, was our test field. It was a very small part of our survey, only 3% of the final area. But in there, we were able to sort of test out our method for finding these lenses and to prove that, in fact, Herschel was very efficient at finding such objects.
So as well as seeing an unprecedented amount of the sky in wavelengths that we've not really been able to observe before, we're seeing these unusual gravitationally lensed things that are almost acting like a zoom lens to see things right back quite close to the Big Bang. I mean, how far away are the objects that we're seeing?
At the moment, the range of redshift, well, the range of distances that we've got, are kind of taken us back to something like 3 or 4 billion years after the Big Bang, so 11 billion years back in time from where we are today. So we're right out to, you know, when the universe was probably only a quarter of its present age. And at the moment, we've only found 5 of these strong gravitational lenses in our current test patch of sky, but we will finally have sort of 30 times that area in the final survey, and we expect to have something like 100 or 200 of these lensed sources in that final sample. And we in principle could see sources even further back, even farther distances. It's just that we've only got a small sample to start with. The promise is that we could see galaxies right back to within 1 or 2 billion years from the Big Bang.
Have you been able to direct other telescopes to have a look at these regions where you're seeing the lensing to confirm or perhaps to take additional measurements of them?
Yes, in fact, because Herschel alone doesn't confirm that they're lenses. I mean, there's certain signatures with the Herschel data that we look for, a very bright source, and a source that we would say had a red colour. That means it's brighter in the longer part of the Herschel wavelength range than the shorter part. that gives us a clue that it should be a gravitational lens, but that's not proof. We do have to follow them up with other telescopes in order to get that final proof. The other telescopes that we've used are, we've used the Keck telescopes on Hawaii, and there we've used those to make detailed imaging of the starlight in the nearby galaxy, in the foreground galaxy. That's the one that's actually acting as the lens. And that means that we can properly, if you like, model the light of the foreground galaxy and check out what type of galaxy it is and what its mass is in order for us to make a model for the lens in. And then we also need to look at the background source in more detail. And we've done this in two ways. One is to image it in higher angular resolution, because the Herschel telescope is great at looking at large patches of sky, but its angular resolution isn't that great. It's a 3.5-meter mirror. But that means our highest angular resolution at the wavelengths we detect these objects in is something like 18 arc seconds, which means everything pretty much looks like a blob. And in order to see the lens structure, you know, whether we've actually got multiple images, that's a typical sign of lensing, is where your background object is split into several images or a ring. And in order to look for those details of the structure of the background galaxy, we needed to make a higher resolution image, but of the dust. So we went to a telescope called the Submillimeter Array, which is in Hawaii. And there are several dishes that are joined together that can take higher resolution images, so the resolution of maybe an arc second. And there we were actually able to see multiple images of the background galaxy, which is, again, it's a strong signature that the galaxy is actually lensed. And furthermore, we were able to make measurements of the distance, the direct distance to that background galaxy, using a line of carbon monoxide gas. So that within our dusty galaxies, there's a lot of gas, and the carbon monoxide molecule creates a spectral line of emission in the radio part of the spectrum. So we could find that spectral line, and much the way that people do with optical spectra, you find a particular element, you look at the position or the wavelength of that line from your galaxy, and then you compare it to what you would measure if that line were on Earth and not moving relative to you, and you measure what we call a redshift. And that means that if the distant galaxy is moving away from us, its spectral line is shifted towards the red part of the spectrum, it's moved to longer wavelengths. And that tells us, basically very directly, that background galaxy is actually much, much further away than the big foreground one that we can see with the Keck telescope.
Would you expect the lensing to degrade the image sufficiently for you to not really be able to take much more information out?
No, in fact, the lensing effect, it actually makes the galaxy appear larger, so it stretches the image out. I mean, it does distort it, so it won't look like a regular galaxy. It'll kind of be stretched out in different directions. But that stretching out, if anything, makes it easier to study, because you can see regions that before would have been too small for you to resolve with your telescope. It would have all sat on top of itself, and it stretches them out, so you can actually see structures much smaller than you would have been able to see otherwise. The redshifts of the gas are really not affected by the lensing process. They still appear to be at the same redshift they would have been. You have to try to reconstruct your image if you really want to say anything about that lensed galaxy and maybe like its size or its shape. You have to make a model of your lens, so you have to try to estimate the way that the mass of the foreground galaxy is distributed and how it would act on light from a background galaxy. So you have to try to create sort of like a geometric model of your system, and then reconstruct what your original background galaxy would have looked like had it not passed through the lens. And that's quite a complicated process, and we do have people who are working on that. But currently, we could really do with some Hubble Space Telescope data as well, to try to get higher resolution imaging of both the foreground and the background sources. And we do have some time to do that. We just don't have the data just yet. But the lens in itself, it does complicate the interpretation of your background galaxy, because it has all been stretched out, but it does actually aid us in investigating these distant galaxies rather than hampering it. It allows us to see things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to see at such huge distances.
If we're modelling the lensing effect as well, does that mean that we're actually learning more about the way that these foreground galaxies interact with space and perhaps the presence of dark matter?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That is the sort of two sides to the science that we can do with the lenses. One is studying the background distant galaxies in more detail, and the other one is using the foreground galaxies as ways of us tracing their dark matter and normal matter, so the star and gas component. Because you have to put both of those elements in order to create the image that you see in the lens. And that is, again, it's a goal of the project to map out the dark matter and normal matter content in a large selection of these foreground galaxies, because, you know, we'll have quite a large sample of a few hundred at the end of the day. And they will span quite a range of cosmic history as well. Our foreground lenses tend to be found at larger distances than similar objects in other optically based surveys. This means that we can hopefully even study the evolution of the dark matter and normal matter components of galaxies with time, to see whether things have been changing as you go back to earlier times. So it's not something we're able to do right now with our small initial sample, but it's something we're planning to do in the longer term with the survey as a whole.
It certainly sounds like you're going to have your work cut out over the next couple of years.
We've been incredibly busy for the last year since we got our first little piece of data about a year ago, and that has occupied many of us. There's something like 150 people involved in the project. We have a wide range of people with different interests, and everybody has been able to find something interesting in this first data set. And we're hoping that sometime after Christmas we'll have 10 times the area of our test field to start furthering the things that we'd found there and finding more exciting stuff. And then sometime by the end of next year we'll be completing our observations and able to look at the picture as a whole. But I think this data set is going to keep many astronomers busy for many years to come, because, Herschel itself, the capabilities of Herschel are not going to be surpassed for many, many years. We're not going to have another mission that can do better than Herschel for probably the next 10 years.
That was Loretta Dunn from the University of Nottingham.
ATLAS is quite an impressive survey. But actually, plans have been put forward for an even larger survey with Herschel. This would be something called the Herschel Legacy Survey. It would cover something like 4,000 square degrees of the sky, compared with ATLAS, which is more like 400 square degrees of the sky. And, of course, there are many advantages to just going larger. You get a better sample of objects, and you can start doing things like combining the data on such a large scale with data from the currently flying Planck telescope to get even better constraints on things like cosmology.
As Loretta said, we're probably not going to have technology any better than Herschel for doing this for 10 years or so, but surely the lifespan of Herschel is limited. It's going to run out of coolant eventually.
That's right on both counts. Herschel is going to be the last word in this kind of far infrared band for a long time. So if this larger survey goes ahead, it will eat up a lot of time that could be used for other projects. So it's got to be balanced against that. And I don't think, as far as I know, that a decision has yet been made on whether to do this larger survey or not.
Thank you very much. We'll have to keep an eye on it.